This is the Marketing Podcast Network. You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to Uncorking a Story, the podcast that introduces you to the rich world of storytellers who share their personal journeys, creative processes, and the stories behind their stories, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Mike Carlin, and I'm thrilled to be part of your writing journey. If you're an aspiring writer, a literary enthusiast, or simply someone who believes in the transformative power of words, you've come to the right place. Every week, we'll pop the cork on the world of successful storytellers and give you a healthy pour of inspiration, insight, and empowerment. My mission is to help writers like you realize your full potential through the transformative and therapeutic power of writing. Whether you're just starting your literary voyage or looking to refine your craft, I'm here to provide you with the knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement you need to embark on your own storytelling adventure. So, are you ready to uncork your story and let your creativity flow? Uncorking a Story is about to begin. Sit back, relax, and let the transformative magic of storytelling whisk you away. Welcome to Uncorking a Story. Well, hey now, and welcome to another exciting episode of Uncorking a Story. I'm Mike Carlin, and I'm so happy to have you with me as I uncork memoirist Suzette Mullen's powerful story about how she chose to live life more authentically. Now, I want to remind you to please follow Uncorking a Story on all social media platforms, including Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Twitter. You can find us at Uncorking a Story on all of those platforms. And if you listen to Uncorking a Story as an audio podcast and are dying to know what me and my guests look like, I invite you to watch us on YouTube. And that's a great way to connect with me, to connect with other fans of the show. I love reading your comments on our YouTube episodes. So please, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel by going to YouTube, searching for Uncorking Story, and hitting subscribe. Now, if you prefer to have Uncorking the Story as ear candy only, I can't fault you for that. But I ask that you please subscribe, rate, and review Uncorking Story wherever you get your audio podcast. Now, today on the show, I have this amazing memoirist named Suzette who discovered who she was later in life. And I don't want to give too much away about her story because it really is hers to tell, but it got me to thinking about the importance of living authentically. Now, this is a topic that's come up before with many of my other authors who have been on the show. In particular, it came up in a big way with author Vincent Tolman, where he suggests perhaps the key to life, the key to being happy in life, is living a more authentic life. And that came to him during a near-death experience, which is a fascinating, fascinating conversation. If you haven't listened to the episode with Vincent Tolman, I encourage you to just go to uncorkingyourstory.com and searching for Vincent Tolman, you'll see his episode come up. A really, really fascinating conversation. And to date, one of the most downloaded, if not the most downloaded episode that I've ever done. But I've talked to a lot of writers on the show, and I'd love to dig into their writing journeys. And one of the things that I've learned is that most of the successful authors that I've spoken with are those who know exactly who they are. You know, perhaps they've embraced something about them that makes them different or makes them unique. I know oftentimes, especially growing up as kids, you know, you don't want to be different. You don't want to be unique because that's the way to get picked on. You know, that's the way I used to get picked on. You know, anything different or unique about you that made you different from like the masses, that's like putting a target on your back. But again, these authors who I've spoken with who are very successful, you know, they live on a they're like unapologetic about their uniqueness, about their differences, and they can tap into that in their writing, and it comes through in their writing. It shows up in their voice as a writer. Also shows up in their voices of the voices of their characters. I think it really does help make a better connection with readers as well. And, you know, I will say that the benefits of living authentically don't just show up in our writing. You know, they show up in the rest of our lives. When we live more authentically, we become happier. And, you know, it kind of makes sense to me. You know, one of the signs of living a more authentic life is, you know, when our actions and our behaviors are in line with our attitudes and beliefs and values. And when all of those areas of our lives are in alignment, happiness just comes through. I can't explain why. Maybe it's because, like, we're reducing, you know, this dissonance inside us. You know, when you believe one thing and you behave another. And I was guilty of that for a long time, you know, and it made me miserable. That's a story for another time. But happiness does come through when you can align all of those things in your life, when you can align your attitudes, your values, and your behaviors. And Suzette Mullen, my guest today, she had a major revelation later in life about what it meant for her to live authentically. It required her to make some big, scary decisions. You know, those decisions had a ripple effects in every aspect of her life, in her family life, in her, amongst her friend group, in her career. You know, it was big and it was scary, but she got through it. She got through those scary times and is now, you know, what she says, living her best life. You know, she calls her memoir a coming of age story, which is kind of funny because you think coming of age stories, and I think she references this as well, as things that happen in your teenage years. You know, your adolescent years. And it happened to her in her 50s. So I think it's kind of cool, actually. But if you're facing something similar, you know, just know that you can do it. You can get through those hard times. You're braver than you think you are. Now, you might say to me, Mike, you are not a therapist. You are not a coach. And you're right. I'm not. I'm just a writer who's had a really interesting career as a writer and in other areas of my life. But what I can tell you about, living authentically is that you can do it. And if you're asking for tips, I'm not gonna give you all of my tips right now, but I can point you to where you can see my tips. And that is on the episode website for this episode. So all you have to do is go to whatever app you're using to listen to this episode and tap on the link associated with the episode, and you'll see my tips, 12 tips for living authentically at the bottom of the page, and enjoy them. Enjoy them. As I want to remind you, my goal with Uncorking a Story is to help make you a better writer. And one way to do that is by rediscovering and embracing your authentic self. And now we're going to talk to somebody who's living a very authentic life. We are going to uncork Suzette Mullen's story. Suzette Mullen is a memoir and nonfiction book host and retreat leader. Her essays have appeared in the New York Times and Today.com, among other outlets. As a book coach, Suzette focuses on amplifying the voices of LGBTQ+ writers as she guides them to find their deeper stories and define their big ideas. She joins me today on Uncorking a Story to talk about her writing career as well as her memoir, The Only Way Through Is Out. Welcome to Uncorking a Story, Suzette.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Suzette, I'm excited to have you here, but I want to start always where I always start these conversations, which is where does your story as a writer begin?
Wow. And that's such an interesting question, because when we actually write a book, we have to decide where we're going to enter the story. So it's a bit meta. There's a couple of places. Like many people, I was writing all of my life, although I don't think I was one of those people that as a child said, I'm going to be a writer when I grow up. But I was always writing and writing in many different ways. I was a lawyer. I was a community volunteer. I was an advocate, and I was always using writing. And in my 30s and 40s, I really tried to claim my call as a writer and actually write a book. I had a number of ideas and I'd get started and I then couldn't bring it to the finish line. And there was this pattern of starting and stopping. So where things really changed for me was in my early 50s. My nest was empty. I have two young adult sons. My youngest had gone off to college and I was ready to really think about what was my next chapter going to look like. And spoiler alert, there were a few surprises in that next chapter. However, initially I was focused on my professional life. What did I want this next chapter of my professional life to look like? And I sat down and really thought about what are all the things I love to do and that I'm good at. And everything that I came up with had writing at its core. And so I had one of those moments of clarity that, you know, come across every once in a while where an inner voice said to me, "You're a writer and an editor, stop fighting it." And that was the moment in my early 50s where I put a stake in the ground and I said, I'm going to do this. I am not going to be a dilettante and fool around with this anymore. And I began really taking myself seriously as a writer and began working on a different memoir from the one that we'll be talking about later. But that's kind of the origin story. I mean, it had many years in the making, but the really calling myself a writer and identifying as a writer happened in my early 50s.
So it sounded like you had a couple of start and stops with writing. What were you trying to write during that period where you were kind of starting and stopping? Was it a memoir? Was it a novel? What was your, you know, intention there?
I was always focused on personal narrative, and it really depended on what was going on in my life at the time. But I was I had a spiritual awakening in my late 30s and early 40s. So there was a period of time where I was writing about that. I was really digging into, and I think this came out of that spiritual awakening, the whole idea about vulnerability. And I wanted to write and explore about that. And early on, even when after I claimed the call as the writer, as I like to say, I wanted to write around this question that was really somewhat confusing to me. My father had an early onset Parkinson's diagnosis. He was 52 when he was diagnosed, which, you know, now seems unbelievably young. Of course, I was 29 at the time, and that didn't seem 52 seemed so old at that point. And but my father was able to live very joyfully in spite of that diagnosis and in spite of, you know, a life that became very difficult. And I wasn't finding a lot of joy in my own life. And I wanted to explore, well, what could I learn from his life? So that's a bit of a long answer to your question, but it was always around personal narrative. And I don't think I would have necessarily early on called it memoir per se, but really that's kind of what it was.
How did your father's diagnosis and his ability to live joyfully impact, if at all, the spiritual awakening you were talking about before?
Yeah, well, I think that we're all searching, right? We're all searching for meaning. We're all searching for what makes up a meaningful life. And so while I was on this sort of spiritual journey, I had this, you know, role model, this father, not just a father figure, an actual father who was demonstrating by his very life qualities that I wanted in my own life. And I knew there was some answer there or something to explore there. And I mean, that's a really interesting question you just asked. And to be honest, I'm going to need to really think about that and think about what the connections are. There probably really are some connections. But all right, I'm making one as on the fly right here. I think that when we are living authentically, when we are living fully as ourselves, that is really when we are able to experience joy. I didn't know that at the time. I could not have articulated that while my father was still alive and when I was not feeling particularly aligned in my own life, but not understanding why. But I think that's all connected. And as you know, we'll talk later about the story that I ended up writing in The Only Way Through Is That, it really does connect to authenticity and joy and all the things.
Yeah, that's the trick, right? I think figuring out who our authentic selves are is hard. I think it's easier when we're kids. I think it's easier when we're children because we're kind of innocent. We're not really tainted by the world and socialization and expectations. And then somewhere along the way, we lose it. And there was a period of my adult life where I know I wasn't living my authentic self because I was living in a way that didn't feel right to me, like on the inside. But I was trying to chase all these things that I think that I thought I wanted, that I thought I needed to live like this happier life. And then, you know, it wasn't until this past summer when my older brother, Gregory, passed away of cancer that I realized that I kind of had it all wrong. You know, one of the things that I learned from his experience was that, you know, in his last 3 years of his life, so he was diagnosed in August of 2020 with stage four cancer. And, you know, he didn't struggle for 3 years. He had a good year and a half before he started to get really, really sick. But, you know, one of the things I would talk to my sister-in-law about after he passed was just how Greg used his time in those last 3 years. And it was really just finding joy in really simple things. You know, for him, it was spending time in his garden, putting together, the right plants and flowers in his backyard to attract hummingbirds, because there was nothing he liked more than seeing hummingbirds come into his yard. And it was like these simple, like really simple things that he got so much joy with. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, it's like I'm chasing so much out there when the real answer is not out there at all, right? The real answer is somewhere in here. And I had to, like, through my grieving process, I was trying to, like, unlock that. And then I started to think, oh my gosh, I don't need this, all this other shit in my life, you know? And I started, even though I was in the depths of grief over my brother, and believe me, I cry almost every day over it, I just, like, felt this, like, change inside me that I was, like, actually a happier person. Not because he died, but because what, like, the end of his life taught me.
Yeah, first, I'm very sorry for your loss, and thank you for sharing that. And I think that we all need catalysts or something to shake us out of the way that we're just doing our life along the way. And in fact, on the first page of my book, The Only Way Through Is Out, I recount a moment the day of my father's funeral, and my sister and I are walking on the beach after his funeral, and we're really reflecting on, well, what did people have to say about our father? And they weren't focusing on, you know, the degrees that he had and, you know, all the accomplishments. They were talking about the kind of person he was. And he was a person that did find joy in the moment. I mean, when you were describing how your brother experienced the last years of his life, I mean, I was resonating with that because my father was very, it feels like my father was very much the same kind of person, in that he would, it was the simple things, and it was being present to what was in the moment. And so I think that, you know, we often just go about our daily lives and then something happens, right? It could be like your brother has a terminal cancer diagnosis, or my father, my father's death. It's an occasion for us to reflect on our own lives and really what does matter. And my story, my books, really starts with that question. I believe that books, particularly memoirs, is that we're exploring some kind of question at the beginning of the book, and we take a journey to understand or to try to answer that question. And really, the question I was asking in the beginning of the story is, what, you know, what does make up a meaningful life, or why am I was lost. I was a new empty nester, and I was lost in my life, and I wanted to discover what was either missing, or what needed to happen in my life so that I could live more joyfully.
Well, I think this is a great segue to talk about your memoir in more detail. So, what more can you share with us about The Only Way Through Is Out?
Yeah, so I like to describe The Only Way Through Is Out as both a coming out and a coming of age story. You know, a bit of a tongue in cheek about coming of age in your 50s. We often think of coming of age stories as, you know, teenagers or young adults, but the high level plot level of the book is that it's the story of me emerging out of a decades long denial about my sexual identity. And once that revelation has been made to me, the story is, what, if anything, am I going to do about this? I had a very nice life. I mean, it was actually very nice. It didn't just look very nice on the outside, but from the outside, it looked like the American dream. I was in a long-term marriage to a man. We had a very nice life. We had financial security. I had a life that many people would envy. And this midlife revelation that actually emerges out of a writing process really shook my world to its core, as you can imagine. And so the story is really the journey of emerging out of that denial and then wrestling with what, if anything, do I do about this revelation.
Yeah, I mean, you're cursed with knowledge at that point, right? And this knowledge is that, hey, I am no longer identifying with who I used to be. And that's going to have, I can only imagine like the anxiety or fear that could bring to your life. Because, you know, you mentioned having a husband, you have two children, it sounds like, mm-hmm. if I heard you correctly. And that's going to cause some ripples. So how did you deal with that? Like, I'm just really, how did it all go down?
Well, you'll have to read the book, but, and everybody else, but I can answer that a little bit more fully. Yeah, it was by far the most challenging time of my life. And I'm hoping that I can say that at the end of my life, I'm hoping there aren't going to be more bigger challenges ahead, but of course we never know. It was really an unfolding process for me. I first spent quite a bit of time trying to really come to terms with what was really true. The early part of the book, I'm working on another memoir. I'm working on a memoir about the question, what do you do? That question that we tend to ask everyone when we first meet them. And that was a question that was challenging for me to answer in my 40s, primarily, after I left the practice of law, and it was a stay-at-home mom, and I was really wandering and searching for professional purpose. So I wanted to examine that story, that question about what do you do, and why had my professional life unfolded the way it had. And in the course of writing that story, this other story emerged, this story about a very intense friendship I had with a long-term female friend. And so the layers of first looking at, well, what was that friendship really? Was it just a friendship, or really was there more? I mean, there wasn't anything more in real life terms as far as a physical or sexual relationship, but there was a lot going on inside my head. Let me just put it that way. And And so then coming to terms with that, I did try to put the genie back in the bottle for quite a while. I did not want to, quote unquote, blow up my life. I didn't want to cause other people pain. It was obviously, you know, it's one thing when you have a revelation about your identity, whether it's a sexual identity or some other revelation, when you're not necessarily impacting other people. But I mean, I was in a long-term marriage and to a man I loved. And so I wrestled and you'll get to hear all that a lot of that wrestling in the book. But ultimately, how I'll answer your question is that I learned that I really needed to listen to what was inside me. I needed to listen to my inner voice. I knew at my core who I was, and I made a decision at a point in the story that I wasn't willing to go to my grave without knowing who I really was and living out who I really was. And that sets in motion kind of the second half of the book. Once I've made that decision, what happens after you make a decision to, quote unquote, blow up your life, for a life that I had only been living in my head? And I'll just say one more thing, Mike, and is that I grew up with the belief that was imprinted by my parents that, you know, life is about playing it safe and not taking risks and following the rules. And so this was going against every single part of how I had been raised.
Yeah. I have to go back to the spirituality comment you made, because I think it's like, you know, part and parcel, like living authentically is, I think that's part of like walking a spiritual path, right? Because, you know, I don't mean just in a religious sense, although, mm-hmm. you know, the two terms are somewhat intertwined. But when you started to sort of align more with who you were, how did that impact your sort of the spiritual direction you were going in? I mean, you know, I assume they were separate at some point and now maybe they're joined together. I just wanted, if you just dig into that a little bit without giving too much away of the book.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So there is there's definitely a spiritual theme and in the book. And that's actually a really, it's kind of an interesting question to talk about because, you know, from a writing perspective, I'll take it first from that angle. I really wrestled with how to both authentically present my spiritual experience, my spiritual journey, which was at the start of the story based in Christianity. I really struggled with how to present that authentically and also in a way that would be accessible to readers who were either not Christian or, and I'm thinking particularly of readers in the LGBTQ+ community who have been traumatized, many of whom have been traumatized by the church. And so that was a tricky path for me to navigate. There is a lot of sort of mixed messages that I was hearing as I was navigating this this life-changing revelation that I really had to try to tune into. What did I really believe? And at the time, I would definitely have identified myself as a Christian in the progressive lane of Christianity. I was never in, like, unlike many in the LGBTQ+ community who are coming out of a fundamentalist background and have maybe family members who have disowned them and all kinds of horrible messaging that they've received. That was not my experience. But I was really I really wanted to do the right thing. And for me, it was less, as far as the spirituality or faith aspect of it, it was less about, you know, is it okay to be gay? It was, for me, it was more about, is it the right thing to do to leave a marriage that I made vows to stay in for better or for worse? And that was a big question for me. I didn't have any other than the fact that I understood my sexual identity differently. But even at the time, I didn't really know what that meant. I mean, that was just kind of, it was being uncovered for me. I didn't know if I thought that was a good enough reason to leave a marriage. So it was all kind of intertwined. And there is a scene, I won't give too much of it away, but there is a scene toward the end of the book that does take place in a church. And there is some real resolution there as far as me feeling like I'm aligned. Everything is kind of coming together, and there isn't this separation between, you know, what either God or the church or, you know, religious people think I should be doing. And there's a really nice moment of alignment toward the end of the book that resolves that storyline.
Yeah. Well, I know we want to entice readers to actually pick up this book and buy it, so we won't ask you to give too much more away. I'm curious if we could shift a little bit and just talk about the work you are doing with other writers. I know you are a coach. Tell me about, you know, when you started coaching other writers and why.
Yeah, so I'm a book coach. I am a certified author accelerator book coach. They are an amazing company led by the inimitable Jenny Nash, who trains and certifies book coaches and then continues to support them. We all work for ourselves, but we have a community. I first hired a book coach when I started working on that first memoir. So I was very familiar with what a book coach does. And the book coach is really someone who guides a writer through the process, not just comes in at the end and, you know, edits a manuscript. So I knew the magic that book coaching could do from the writer side. And I had been doing some freelance editing and kind of informally serving as a book coach before I really even knew what it was. And I decided to up-level my expertise. And so in 2020, just around the time when the world fell apart, we had a global pandemic, I was certified and began working with writers really as a full-time career. So it's been about 4 years now, and I now work primarily. I always was working in the memoir and nonfiction space, but I've focused my business more on serving LGBTQ plus memoir writers. I still do work with straight people, but I have. So, you know, anyone who's listening, don't feel like my doors are closed to you. But I have. I've put a lot of energy into developing a group mentorship program called Write Yourself Out, where it's a year-long mentorship program where I help meet, and it's just for LGBTQ plus writers, and I just help them get clear on what their story is, help them find confidence, and go on that path from idea to publication.
So what words of advice would you give somebody looking to start a memoir now?
Yeah, so at least two pieces. First piece would be to do some planning first. And people get a bit hung up on that. Some people think, oh, I just, you know, I'm not a planner. I'm a pantser. I'm just going to write the thing. Even if you feel that way, getting clear on some fundamental questions first, like, why do you want to write this book? Really, what is it that you want to say? And who do you want to say it to? And there's a few other fundamental questions that I always ask writers to think about before they start writing. But I would say absolutely do some planning first. And I can recommend a book. It's called Blueprint for a Memoir. It's by Jenny Nash, the founder of Author Accelerator that I mentioned, that book coaching company. It's a great, great book for memoir writers, and it will take them through some of those planning steps, those fundamental questions. So that would be number one. Number two is, we were talking about this a little bit before, is writers, nobody writes a book in isolation. Nobody just goes off to that cabin in the woods and churns out a book and turns it into queries an agent and they say it's a great book. It doesn't work that way. And you need to find your people. You need to find writing community. And that can look like a lot of different things. I mean, you can hire a book coach so you have some ongoing support, but you don't have to spend money to have writing community that will help you get your project to the finish line. You can form your own writing group in person, online. You can start your own. Yeah, you form your own. You can find other writers. But don't try to do it alone, because this is not a journey. This is not a journey that is an easy one. Particularly writing memoir, you are digging into your own story, your past. Things are going to come up. And it is an emotional roller coaster. And if you try to do it on your own, I'm going to give you the hard truth. I doubt you're going to get to the finish line.
Yeah. And, you know, just requires, and just be prepared for the amount of vulnerability it's going to require for you to kind of dig into your past, not only to dig into it and uncover it, but also share it with other people. I mean, that's at the end of the day, you're not writing a memoir just for yourself. You're hoping it's going to get published. At least most of us do, right? We hope for publication. I mean, some people might want to write it for themselves and then burn it, I suppose. But
yeah. Well, I think often memoir writers, they know this is something they have to write. They may not know in the beginning whether they do want to publish it or, you know, that they want to share it with anybody. But there is this burning desire to write their story so they can first make sense of it for themselves, connect the dots. And then, I mean, it's a perfectly fine decision to just write for yourself or write for family members. But the writers that I work with are interested in publication. And that is it's a long path to get from idea to publication. And you need to have people supporting you along the way.
And we will end with my letter to me question, which is, if you could write a letter to your younger self, put it in the mail, and then by the power of, the space-time continuum, you can send this letter to your younger self. What are some of the things you might write in that letter?
Oh, my gosh. I actually have thought about this. And what I would write to her is I would say, you are more capable than you believe. You are braver than you believe. And you can trust yourself. Listen to your inner voice. Listen to yourself. Don't think that other people have the answers for you, which isn't to say I wouldn't tell her to be an isolationist either. I would tell her to find, just like I said with the writers, find your people in your life, I would tell her. But I would tell her that you're responsible for your life, and don't put off living your life. And I would just say, go for it. Listen to yourself, trust yourself, and go for your life.
Go for it. There you go. I love it. I think that'll be the name of this episode, is Go For It.
Okay.
Why not? Suzette, I'm sure we've intrigued a few listeners, maybe more than just a few. Where can people go to learn more about you? Do you have a website or social media that you're active with?
Yes. So my website is yourstoryfinder.com, and that has all the information about both my book coaching and the book and all the things. And I'm most active on Instagram, and my Instagram handle. It's a little confusing. It's You Are Story Finder, because somebody else took your Story Finder, so I had to get a different handle. But I love, I'm pretty active on social media, so I love interacting and engaging with other readers and writers.
All right. Well, I'll be sure to put all of that in our show notes so people don't have to frantically write everything down right now. We will point them in the right direction. And Suzette, I will say thank you so much for dropping by Uncorking a Story and letting me uncork yours.
Thank you so much, Mike. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Uncorking a Story. If you'd like more information about today's guest or to find out more about Mike, go to uncorkingastory.com. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in every week to hear Mike Carlin uncork a new story.